This is St. Louis on the Air from St. Louis Public Radio. I'm Elaine Cha. The radioactive legacy of the U.S.'s Manhattan Project has affected the St. Louis region for more than 50 years. The impact of the atomic waste dumped here wasn't as immediate as a nuclear bomb going off. Instead, the damage showed up in the bodies of people who lived near places like Coldwater Creek and the Westlake landfill. That harm took the form of cancer and other illnesses, and it's taken decades for residents to convince the federal government to do something about it. Last summer, the government finally acted by expanding RECA, the Radiation Exposure Compensation Act. The expansion of RECA affects people in 21 zip codes in the St. Louis area. To get that compensation, they must offer proof of residency and of their illnesses. The program is picking up steam. Since this summer, the federal government has reported paying out more than $63 million to more than 1,300 people here in Missouri and parts of Kentucky and Tennessee. For an update on RECA and the effort to get compensation for people who are sickened by radioactive waste, I'm joined by Dawn Chapman, the co-founder of the advocacy group Just Moms STL. Dawn, welcome back to the show.
Thank you, Elaine.
So since Just Moms, since July, Just Moms, got great news, but it had been working for more than a decade on this issue, including the expansion of RECA. And in July, people were just starting to apply for this program. So it's been about 8 months now. Since then, about 11,000 people have applied and 1,300 have been approved. Dawn, what has stood out to you in watching this process and how people are approaching it?
So I think overnight, what people thought was more like an urban legend with the region, with their exposure, became true. It became real to them. And I think we saw an immediate influx of people that wanted to understand the program, wanted to know how to sign up, wanted to understand if they needed a lawyer. There's a lot of confusion. And I think, one of our colleagues, Danielle with St. Louis County, describes it as all of us having to build the plane while flying it. That is still very accurate. We had to immediately run and lay the infrastructure for where people could go to get records to even be able to apply for this program. So it's been a sprint. We have been running as hard as we can, as fast as we can since then, and we're pleased at the numbers, but it is exhausting.
Mm-hmm. So seeing the amount of money awarded go up, it's at almost $64 million now. Has that given you some of the energy that you need to do all this work?
It has, but it also validates the exhaustion and the energy that we've spent. It lets us know that we're doing a good job, that we're gathering people, and that people are able to navigate this program. It's also helping us, when people come to apply, to be able to show them that people have received compensation. So this is a real program that people can apply, and it does pay out if they meet the qualifications. You have to remember, these people are very sick, and they have been through extreme heartbreak. They've lost a lot of loved ones, and so for them to go through the effort of collecting these documents, they have to know that this is real, and that if they go through the effort, this is what will happen on the other side if they can prove.
What is it that you've been hearing from folks who have been approved for this compensation?
So I think those are some of our favorite messages, and just the different ways that $50,000 for those who are currently ill makes just a massive impact on their life. They're able to pay off medical bills. They're able to afford different types of treatments that can extend their life that were not completely covered by insurance. They're able to purchase vehicles to get to treatments. They're able to, some for the first time, a husband and wife were able to purchase their first condo. They own a condo. And for her, we don't know what the future carries for our illness, but we know that we will not be homeless.
Mm-hmm. For those who are denied, What is the process there? What happens for those who get a no the first time?
So nobody's getting a no. What they're getting is a, we need more information. They're mm-hmm. getting a, we need you to provide more residency, or we need you to provide better medical records, that sort of thing. But there will eventually be denials, and we're waiting to see what those denials will look like.
Mm-hmm. Now, there is help available for people who are struggling to get their RECA applications in order, and that includes the St. Louis County Library. And to tell us more about that, we're joined by Brent Trout. He is the manager of the library's History and Genealogy Department. Brent, welcome to the show.
Hello there.
So people with RECA cases, why are they coming to you, the genealogy expert, for help?
This is kind of a twist of fate. You know, as we talked about, this program was really, you know, all of a sudden it was announced it was going to happen, and it happened. I had a meeting notice on my calendar to talk about RECA, and I said, oh, yeah, I know about that. And then all of a sudden, the meeting never took place because the program was already announced, and we had about 48 hours at the St. Louis County Library to figure out how we could help people, because that's what we do at the St. Louis County Library. And so the way that we help people, so I manage one of the largest history and genealogy departments in the country, so many people don't realize that. And traditionally, we help you find the most important thing, family. And so that is finding your ancestors. It could be your grandparents. It could be your parents if you don't know them. So to be able, we transfer those skills to be able to help you figure out where you used to live and to show documentation of that, and where your parents, because that's who you can claim. You can claim yourself. You can claim your parents. So we're able to do that. And so we transfer those skills. So in an amazing way, we used to do this for a hobby, because genealogy is a hobby. It's not something that's required to live. You know, it's something fun. Now we're actually helping people put money in their pockets, and, you know, also holding the government accountable. So they're coming to us because we have expertise and we have sources like city directories. We have access to different records throughout the St. Louis area and time. And not only that, like, one thing about being a librarian, librarians, we may not have the answer for you, but we have the referral to know where to get the answer for you. So mm-hmm. we collect all this information so that, hey, oh, where do I get a birth certificate? Well, where are you looking for a birth certificate? You go here. And we're just a collection of helpful resources. And we're also a community gathering point. So the St. Louis County Library has 20 branches throughout St. Louis County. So you can go to a branch and get help with this. It may not be immediate, but they will connect you to where you can get help, be it with my department, be it with the county. So that's the natural, the county library is the natural place to go to get help for anything.
Mm-hmm. Don, you're nodding.
I think that the library stepping up as quickly as they did, and Brent and his team, is the reason why we have $63 million in paid out in the Manhattan Project claim. We are, if you look at our numbers compared to the other, you know, areas that are qualified for RECA, it's very clear that the ground game here, as Brent described, we are figuring that out. We are adapting. We are talking all the time, and that we are able to supply that for our residents.
Mm-hmm. So we're talking about a lot of people, and we're looking at a lot of years as well. Brent, how far back are you having to look for some of these folks who are coming with requests for records, and what kinds of records are you dealing with?
So you can start at 1949. So 1949 was eligibility for this RECA Compensation Act in St. Louis counts. That's when the records show that the government knew there was toxicity in the area and that it wasn't good for humans. So we are having to go back all the way to 1949, which, I mean, in the scheme of what we do traditionally, we go back to 1600s for many people. So for us, having to go back this far, not very daunting, but the type of records. So we start with a variety of records. The first and foremost are going to be city directories. So before phone books existed, and really privacy, people loved to be listed. You know, there was a business around having people in neighborhoods and the city listed as far as where they lived, what their occupation was, were they a renter, homeowner. Other businesses would use this to market, but also people would use this to figure out where people were at. So mm-hmm. it was, you know, the yellow or the white pages before the white pages were the white pages. And those transitioned into our traditional phone books, but we're able to use those because the companies who did those back in the day, and one was Polk's and the other was Haynes, and Haynes is still around. they were so good about doing their research and having people participate that these are reliable records. But outside of that, we're having to find marriage records in cases. We're having to find religious records, yearbooks. So we are one of the largest digital holders of St. Louis area yearbooks in the area. And so we have a digital archive that we constructed. And the RECA impact on that has been significant because with all the people needing these resources, it directed us to focus mainly on resources beneficial to RECA. So it's just been a huge go. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we always tell people if you have a yearbook for a St. Louis area high school, please, you know, consider donating it to us so we can help other people. You know, we can certify it for you if you have a claim going, but also by making a copy of it and making it available, you could be helping thousands. You know, we don't know ultimately how many people will be applying for this RECA program. You know, some numbers out there are 300,000, but, you know, how do we get that number? Mm-hmm. But it's going to be significant, and this will be the largest RECA program that they have accomplished at this point.
Yeah, and I should note that the number of applicants is near 11,000. How does it feel to be able to deliver some proof to people who need them for these RECA claims, Brent?
You know, so a lot of people come to us and, you know, I understand too. So, you know, there's varying levels of education across the country, varying levels of literacy. My mother from a very young age was like teaching me how to get things that I needed, like, here's where a birth certificate is. Here's where this is at. So many people haven't had to do these things. And especially, you know, I don't want to go into the patriarchy, but I'm going to. You know, some people never change their names. Some people don't have to do that, you know. So
right.
Teaching people where to find those documents, because it's daunting. And I mean, you know, still to this day, even though the Great Divorce happened a long time ago, many people don't realize that St. Louis City is separate from St. Louis County. And that's a huge thing. You know, mm-hmm. Lots of times people think our library system is St. Louis Public, and like, no, we're out in the county. So it feels amazing to deliver this because, you know, like I said before, I mean, traditionally we're helping people find their family, and that's a huge thing. Many people are discovering their heritage, they're discovering their past, but in this case, we're doing the same thing, but we're helping you, a lot of people, when they think it's just not possible. And so to be able to deliver that, and they, you know, the smile on their face, like, oh, I never thought of it. And it also connects them to heritage as well and to genealogy. They go, wow, what else can you find? And mm-hmm. So not only have we got them their compensation and their you know, the resolution, the closure sometimes to this, but we're also getting them interested into another hobby. Mm-hmm. And I love that. You know? And there are cases where people just want to give up. And I always tell people, you know, this is a dance. We are doing a slow dance. So we're going to do this. Maybe the DOJ will accept it. They're going to come back and maybe ask for more information. That's okay. We're going to pivot over to another foot, and we're going to find more sources. Because, you know, you've got to be creative. That's the huge thing. You know, I can think of examples that I just went through. The county, I somehow, my life's weird. I became the emergency RECA guy. So Danielle from the county sent me something the other day, and she's like, Brent, we just can't find something for this person, and you're our only hope. And I'm like, Obi-Wan Kenobi, I am. Let's do this. So this person had moved around so many times, and I have to ask questions. I'm doing like a reference interview. That's what we call it in library world. Mm-hmm. I go, so can you give me a timeline of where you were here, where you were here, and where you were here? And she basically said, oh, honey, I moved to protect my children.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
So we found the records. And she was just, I never thought anybody would find these.
Yeah.
It's like, we did. Mm-hmm. That's us.
Yeah. Don, how much do these partnerships with, you know, public service providers, public servants like Brent and other organizations, how much has that been an integral part of this process?
It's been the process. It was not something just moms can do. So the partnership with the library, the partnership with the Pink Angels, the partnership with St. Louis County, and with the senator's office, Senator Hawley's office, you know, I think we're constantly, as Brent described so well, bouncing it. We get very tough cases. We get emotional cases. And I love the fact that everybody I send to Brent or the library feels safe there. Some of these, as he described, are very... It is a very emotional, it is a very difficult from a mental health standpoint sometimes applying for this. And they are very safe in Brent's hands. We know where to send them. And it's been seamless. So when we get a tough case like that and we can work it through all of us and get it to Brent, and Brent pulls out his magic Harry Potter wand and finds it, and then the person comes back and goes, oh my gosh, I'm mailing my application. And then in 2 weeks, we're following through the process. It makes all of this worth it.
Yeah. We need to take a quick break here, but first, I'd like to invite you to the conversation. We want to hear your experience with Rika and the impact of radiation in this region. Give us a call at 314-382-8255. That's 314-382-TALK. You can also email us at talk@stlpr.org. We'll be back shortly to continue this conversation. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio.
Support comes from Gemma, architects, planners, and designers seeking to bring joy to their clients and communities. Details at gemastl.com.
Welcome back. We're talking today about a program of the federal government to compensate thousands of people in the St. Louis region who've been diagnosed with radiation-related sicknesses. The Radiation Exposure Compensation Act, or RECA, has already paid out more than $63 million. Our guests today are Dawn Chapman, she's the co-founder of Just Moms STL, and Brent Trout. He manages the History and Genealogy Department for the St. Louis County Library. We have someone calling from O'Fallon, Missouri, and that is Jerry. Jerry, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. I want to start with a shout out to the people at the County Library. I visited there twice, and they were extremely helpful in finding my residency from my initial, you know, from the time I was born until I was about 22 or 23 years old. And through the city directory, and also I thought it was a little bit odd that 3 years of my high school yearbook would suffice, but I guess between both of those, it pretty much lays it out. Anyway, there I grew up. Our street ended at Maylene Creek, which is the same source at Lambert Field as Coldwater Creek, but hasn't gotten as much attention, I think. But there were three or four people I grew up with that all died before over the age of 45 of some pretty odd cancers, and I myself had a lymphoma and also kidney cancer, both associated with exposure to heavy metal or radioactive toxins about 15 years ago. And obviously I finished my application earlier this month. I've yet to hear anything back, but I did use the online portal, which I think made things much, much easier. And anyway, I'm very grateful for the assistance that I got, and I guess we'll just see what happens. But it was a relatively painless process, and I would encourage anyone who thinks they might be eligible to try it.
Mm-hmm. That's great to hear, Jerry. Thank you so much for sharing that, and good luck with that application. You know, both of your families, Dawn and Brent, have been affected by radiation-related illnesses. What can you tell us about how your families have approached this process? Dawn, let's start with you.
So I'm going to be very honest. It has been difficult for my family because although I have a sick husband and a sick son, their illnesses do not qualify. And I knew that going in. There was a time where my son's illness looked like it could have been added, but it ended up being stripped out. But he was extremely sick when I was in D.C. multiple times trying to get this. And so it was very difficult to push for a program that didn't help my family, but also have a kid that needed me, and it took me away from my child. However, I will say, in talking with them and in my own this has redefined, I think, the word justice. I get my justice. My family gets their justice from this caller calling in and seeing him get his, you know. And I think, you know, for what the government did to my family, they are being held accountable for what they did to other families. And that is how, vicariously through that, every application, seeing this number rise, this is how the Chapman family is getting their justice.
Mm-hmm. Brent, how about you?
Oh, you know, so my aunt, she developed cancer. She lived in the area, worked in the area. My grandmother died from multiple cancers. So for us, it's, you know, when this happened, we did a wait and see. You know, I have been helping thousands of people. My department has been helping thousands of people, but we weren't in a rush to do this. We wanted to see how it all played out, and it was hard to go personal about it. So it's been it's closure. You know, I say it's hard to say, like, it's not going. It's money. I mean, it's great. Doesn't change anything, but it's closure and it's justice. That's what I say there.
Mm-hmm. There is a good bit of misinformation that is out there. So with the good, there is also the not so good. And people not having the right information is an issue. How have you all been dealing with that at Just Moms STL?
So by working very closely with Brent in the library, with St. Louis County, with the Pink Angels, with Senator Hawley's office, and trying to create the ability when we see misinformation to chase it down. You know, we're using Facebook, we're using social media to correct things, but those are actually also sources of misinformation. And so it's a catch-20. I think because this is so emotional and because it's misinformation is emotionally dangerous because it can get people's hopes up that they qualify when they do not. And we do not want to see that, you know. So it's more than just a barrier for people getting access and being able to apply. It can harm them emotionally. And so we're taking it very serious. We're doing what we can. And that's why we're here, Elaine. You know, anytime we're given the opportunity to come on to a show like this and give facts and straightening out, we're going to take it.
Mm-hmm. One of the facts is that there's a deadline for RECA. That's December 31st, 2027. And Brent, you'd mentioned, you know, getting some of this information, you need to think of it as a slow dance. But there is a clock on this. What happens, Dawn, December 31st, 2027?
So at the end of that date, no more applications will be allowed to be submitted, and they will just continue for the next year fulfilling those and going and working on them and seeing if they can approve them. And so for us, you bring up a really good point, which is we are all struggling right now and trying to make this program as effective as possible, but we also, our organization is thinking long-term, how do we keep RECA around? Can we reauthorize this program before then? Because as the numbers are showing you in less than 6 months, St. Louis, this entire Missouri region, we need this program and we need it to stay around.
What is your sense of whether that is possible? I mean, is there something that you've been hearing from either Senator Josh Hawley directly or from his office?
So the first thing is to even make it possible was for us to run and do what we did, which is get these numbers in Missouri climbing as quickly as we can to show that this program can save lives, that it works. But, you know, I think for the listeners, I don't know about you, but every time I turn on the TV, there's something else going on as far as Congress and the Senate goes. This is going to be a big task to reauthorize this program. It's going to be difficult, and we are already brainstorming ways, but really that's going to mean our organization has got to fundraise, and we're going to have to go back to D.C. and do more educating on what's happening here.
Mm-hmm. We have Harvey, who is calling from Chesterfield. Harvey, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Hi, Dawn. It's been a while.
Hi, Harvey.
Hey, I'm calling you first off. The work that you've done, and the world needs to know what you guys have done. It's not just Dawn, but Dawn's been key. What a group of citizens can accomplish who are, you know, really passionate about something is just amazing. I've had the honor of working with these folks for a number of years on this issue, and I've never seen anything as... I don't know how to say this. It's exercised our form of government. It's showing that our government can respond when we figure out how to get things done, how it works. Civics education, I think, in this country needs to increase a lot so that folks understand there are ways to make our society better within the system. And once again, Dawn and all the citizen researchers, none of this could have been done without the whole team. There's so many people who contributed along the years. But thank you for all your work, and that's my comment.
Mm-hmm. Harvey, thank you. It's great to have that note, you know, about people power. And how, you know, Just Moms STL and others who've supported, you know, Brent, what you are doing, that this is all, this is part and parcel, you know, in making sure that people do not only receive compensation, but as you've said, justice for what either they themselves have been going through or what their you know, forebears have had to deal with. Don, last month, the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers demolished 6 homes in Florissant, and that was to clean up soil contaminated with radioactive waste. You know, as we close, can you tell us about what it was like to see those demolitions and what it represents for the future?
So I think that might have been one of the most heartbreaking days in the 13-plus years, standing next to a homeowner as her home's being torn down, having her describe as the machine is tearing into her living room, that's where my Christmas tree went. That was her comment. And she had her son on the phone, and he was watching the video because he wanted to see it. And it was just, she was trying to be a mom at the same time. And then I turned, Karen Nickel was with me, and we turned and we looked in the United States Army Corps, who has for the longest time, I think, downplayed the issue. They're standing there, and the look on their faces of just sorrow, these military guys, just so sorrowful at the fact that this is where it's the turn that it's taken. But I think the hope that I have out of that is that those homes needed to come down, and they made a very difficult decision, and they made the right decision. But with that comes the hope that we can then turn around and say, so listen, we have homes built on top of this. We have to keep RECA around for the people that lived in those homes that are not sick yet, that might be sick in the next 10 years. So that's how we turn around and we use, as Harvey described, tragedy to get civil action and to keep this program alive.
Don Chapman is co-founder of Just Moms STL, and Brent Trout manages the History and Genealogy Department for the St. Louis County Library. Thank you both for joining us today, and best of luck with your work going forward.
Thank you.
Thank you.
This episode was produced by Danny Wisentowski.
Audio engineering and podcast design by Aaron Dorr.
Our executive producer is Alex Hoyer.
St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio. Understanding starts here.
Do you find yourself regularly listening to episodes of St. Louis on the Air? Suggest us to a friend you think might enjoy our conversations. And leave us a review and rating on Apple Podcasts on the App Store. It's the simplest way to help people discover our show. Thank you.
St. Louis Public Radio is a member-supported service of the University of Missouri-St. Louis.